Hello and welcome to Truth in Journalism, a radio broadcast dedicated to applying the Word of God to current events. Well, today on Truth in Journalism, we're going to talk about Palestinian refugees. And our story is from Becky Sullivan of NPR and has been heavily edited for time. What to know about the train derailment in East Palestine, Ohio? The derailment of a train carrying hazardous materials near a town in Ohio earlier this month has prompted environmental concerns and chemical fears for residents, even as state officials work to reassure them. From the very start of this, we have taken every step possible to assure that people's safety was first and foremost, Dr. Bruce Vanderhoff, the director of the Ohio Department of Health, said at a Tuesday press conference. And as authorities work to assess the damage and investigate the derailment, more information has emerged this week about the chemicals in the rail cars, a variety of contaminants and carcinogens. Some of the chemicals, 5 rail cars worth of vinyl chloride, was intentionally burned off in a controlled explosion last week, which prompted a temporary evacuation of the area. 5 of the derailed cars were carrying vinyl chloride, a man-made substance that is a key ingredient in PVC, the hard plastic resin used widely in construction and healthcare. At room temperature, vinyl chloride is sweet-smelling, colorless, and a gas. It is typically transported in the form of a compressed liquid. Inhalation of vinyl chloride can cause respiratory symptoms like shortness of breath, along with neurological symptoms like headaches and dizziness. Chronic exposure to high levels of vinyl chloride has been associated with liver damage and cancer, according to the CDC. Authorities eventually grew concerned about rising temperatures inside a single rail car, which they worried would cause a catastrophic explosion, sending shrapnel up to a mile away. The risk of the car exploding was described to me as high, Governor Mike DeWine said at a press conference Tuesday. Ultimately, officials decided to pursue a controlled release of the volatile vinyl chloride because burning vinyl chloride can cause the production of other toxic chemicals, including hydrogen chloride and phosgene. Officials ordered the evacuation of a 1-by-2-mile area around East Palestine on both sides of the state line. On February 6, crews released the vinyl chloride from the derailed cars into a trench where they burned it off in a controlled explosion, causing a dramatic plume of black smoke. The fire was finally extinguished on February 8, after which the evacuation order was lifted. Officials said air quality was measured and deemed safe before allowing residents to return home. So if you're like me, you have questions about East Palestine, Ohio, and its residents. If you're like me, you may be a bit dubious about exactly how necessary it was to explode a cloud of chlorine gas over a small border town, if you're like me. There's a part of you that wonders just a little bit whether this controlled explosion was absolutely necessary or whether it was just the fastest and cheapest way to get the trains rolling again. Now, as I said in last week's episode, I'm going to stick with the facts. I'm going to stick with the publicly available data from sources that are as reputable and broadly accepted as we can find. Notice I phrased that last sentence very carefully. There is no media outlet I trust altogether. There's no member or branch of government that I trust altogether. There's no corporation or industry I trust altogether. But the reality is that we do have to get our journalism from somewhere, and you have to pick your poison and cross-reference media, with independent experts in certain topics. Frankly, it would be the cat's meow if we could just trust one of the 3-letter networks, but I think that unwise. But the dubiousness of their truthfulness doesn't mean that the major media outlets aren't going to be the most well-funded and broadly accepted groups that are going to have the easiest access to the power players, but that's a whole nother story that we'll have to talk about another day. Because when it comes to the East Palestine derailment and the cleanup, there are a lot of questions. These questions don't have easy answers, or maybe not easy answers that the likes of us are ever going to be privy to, but they do have answers. While no one individual may be personally and entirely responsible for what happened, there certainly are people who bear responsibility. As of the time of recording, it would appear that the best explanation for why the train derailed is because of a catastrophic failure of an overheated wheel bearing. Okay, I get it. Wheel bearings wear out. They are a part that is literally designed to wear out. You wear out the bearings so you don't wear out the axles. So let's assume that this is true, that there was no skullduggery, as some are asserting, and which I am not asserting and don't believe yet. Let's take it at face value that the blown wheel bearing caused the derailment. Okay, so a series of questions should follow. Why was the bearing overheated? When was the last time the bearing assembly was inspected? Why was the bearing allowed to overheat to the degree that it caused a derailment? Because the thing is, bearing failures, according to one study, are the number three cause of train derailments, accounting for about 6% of all derailments. And moreover, bearing failure derailments are more common than some other factors in speeds over 25 miles an hour. Thus, they're more likely to be serious accidents than rail yard derailments happening under 10 miles an hour. Now, since there are about 1,000 derailments a year, and of those, according to older data that we're assuming is fairly stable, a little over 50% of all derailments are on the main rails. And since bearing failures are responsible for about 6% of derailments, we can say that at minimum, there are 30 derailments on the main lines per year due to bearing failure. Now, maybe you're saying that that number is acceptably low. I don't agree. I don't agree because bearing failure derailments are largely preventable. I'm not saying that bearing failure is entirely preventable. I'm saying that bearing failure derailments are largely, if not entirely, preventable. There is technology that will act as an advanced warning system that will alert engineers and others to the danger of a failed bearing, with more than enough lead time to replace the bearing. Now, the railways do have infrared sensors that can detect wheel bearing failure. However, these sensors are placed up to 20 miles apart, and overheat failure can occur within 2 miles, which to me isn't a solution, but rather a cheap way of pretending to do something about a problem that you have no intention of actually solving, because solving the problem is expensive and hard. And if there's one thing the railroad industry doesn't like, it's expensive and hard. There are practical technologies that can be implemented, but simply aren't because, well, it's expensive. In fact, there are a lot of things that could be done to improve railroad safety, but they're all expensive. And the simple fact of the matter is that the railroad industry has determined that they would rather pay to clean up the accidents than to prevent them in the first place, which to me sounds like callous disregard for other people. Now, don't get me wrong, okay? I'm not a ridiculous person. I understand that just because a safety measure might save one life or prevent one accident, that we should do it. There are things that are ruinously expensive. We could lower the speed limit on trains, and heck, we could outlaw trains altogether, but that's not really a solution to the logistical challenges that this country faces. I know that dollars and cents do matter, but I also know that this is not just a matter of dollars and cents, and it makes no sense to pretend that it is, because here's the thing. If the railroads have the technology and it's economically feasible to implement it, and they are choosing not to do so because it isn't as profitable as just paying for the cleanup, then that's evil. It's actually very similar to the question of why railroads aren't required to have lights and crossbars at every intersection. Is it expensive? Yes. Do we know that it saves lives? Yes. Why should taxpayers bear that burden? Look into the history of railroads and you'll see that few people have ever gotten the kind of sweetheart deals that the railroads got. Moreover, the railroads are ludicrously profitable. Back in 2019, they had profitability rates higher than 50%. That's the highest of any industry in America. Just the 7 biggest rail companies in the U.S. and Canada netted over $27 billion in 2021. I'm guessing that they could have spent some of that $27 billion putting gates with lights and arms on all the intersections that lack them. According to the Ohio Public Utilities Commission, the average upgrade of an intersection costs about $200,000. At that rate, they could upgrade 135,000 railway crossings. There are only 129,500 public at-grade crossings, and half of them already have some kind of advanced warning system. So if you're keeping score at home, that means with 1 year's net income, the 7 biggest rail companies in America could more than pay to upgrade every single public at-grade crossing. Every one of them. Why isn't this mandated? Why has nothing been done about this? Money. Plain and simple. Money. And another fun fact for those keeping score at home. When Governor DeWine gave the go-ahead to detonate the vinyl chloride, the ignition of vinyl chloride created hydrogen chloride and phosgene gas. If you feel like phosgene is a term you've heard before, it's because it is. You're thinking back to your world history class in 10th grade and remembering that phosgene is one of the names for chlorine gas that they used in World War I to kill people, which was banned by the Geneva Conventions, which is a war crime to use on people. But it's okay, guys. Don't worry. We weren't dropping chemical weapons on our nation's enemies. No, we'd never do something that evil. We just created a cloud of chlorine gas over top of a bunch of poor white people. And poor people don't count anyways. And they especially don't count if they're poor whites. We might maybe give a crap about poor non-whites, but no, we ain't gonna shed a tear over that plain white trash, even if fancy is their name. Brothers and sisters, I'm not saying that there's any one person to blame for the derailment, and maybe engaging in an act that would in some circumstances be considered a war crime really was the safest option because a catastrophic explosion would have been worse. Maybe, just maybe, recapture of those gases into a refrigerated car to prevent explosion was impossible or impracticable. Maybe. I'm not a chemical engineer. I'm not a hazmat expert. But I am a man with questions. I want to know how preventable this derailment was. I want to know how necessary the detonation was. I want to know what will be done to make the people of East Palestine and its environs whole. I want to know who will be held responsible if people do develop cancer and die from this, or just get cancer and get sick from this. I want to know why the most profitable industry in this country is allowed to continue to ignore improved safety technologies, lay off workers, and reduce safety standards. This isn't to save the industry. This isn't cut corners or no more choo-choos. No, these are multi-billion dollar concerns that seem to operate with impunity. And frankly, the most absurd thing of all of this is that Norfolk Southern has given a ludicrous pittance of money for a disaster cleanup and made vague promises to help the town recover in its press releases. But Norfolk Southern, despite these press releases and promises, seems rather more interested in getting all this over as quickly and cheaply as possible. It frankly astonished me that this town had poison gas released over it because of a train wreck, and the people were told to thoroughly deep clean their homes themselves from the poison. I am utterly shocked that officials would have the nerve to tell the residents of East Palestine and its environs, just go clean up the poison. Just, you know, all that poison that Norfolk Southern spilled and the government okayed detonating. But it's okay, everybody. They're just rural whites who live in a small border town. They'll only be relevant for another half a news cycle, and then we can just leave their lives and community shattered and move on with making money. And this is a theological problem. This is something Christians should care about. The Mosaic Law says that we are our brother's keepers, and Jesus commands us to love our neighbors. You can't love your neighbor when you're choosing slightly more exorbitant profits over other people's lives, over the lives of entire communities and entire ecosystems. Friends, brothers, sisters, justice does matter to God. And a nation that will allow some of the wealthiest people in the world to poison a whole community and walk away without making them whole is a perverse, degenerate, and wicked nation. I hope that we're better than that. I hope Ohio is better than that. I pray that Governor DeWine and Attorney General Yost will use every power at their disposal to ensure that Norfolk Southern pays every last red cent to make this right, and not just some phony baloney cleanup, which is just getting the tracks cleared, but that they're actually paying to fix and repair homes, to purchase new homes, to clean the soil, to replace livestock, to pay for medical care, and from now on until the last person exposed to this poison is dead and gone and Jesus is returned. Because that's justice and accountability. That's how Norfolk Southern makes this right. Or at least it's the first step. And if and only if corporations like Norfolk Southern are forced by the state, will they make this right? So friends, brothers, sisters, get on the phone, get on the computer, make some calls, send some emails, and let DeWine and Yost and your state congressional representatives and your congressmen and your senator, let them all know that Norfolk Southern must make this right. And not only that, but the railroad industry needs to improve their safety standards or they will be punished. Only that is justice. Anything less is injustice. Anything less is legalized theft and legalized bloodshed. And God has some strong things to say about nations that don't punish bloodletters and bad men. I pray our nation, our state, will hold those accountable accountable. As Christians and citizens, we ought to join our voices together and make them heard so that the Ohio government knows that the people of Ohio won't stand for East Palestine being railroaded. I hope and pray we won't, and I hope and pray you'll join us again next time for another exciting episode of Truth in Journalism. Thank you, and may God bless your day to His glory.